From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Alyssa Block. Investigators in Texas yesterday said they're still trying to figure out what caused the deadly explosion last month at the West Fertilizer Company. The blast killed 14 people and destroyed dozens of homes and other buildings. The chemical industry's own reports show thousands of plants across the country where a single accident or terrorist attack could put an entire community at risk, even a city. Some government officials and public advocates have been fighting for decades to require companies to redesign their plants to make them safer. But as NPR's Daniel Zwerdling reports, industry executives and their allies in Congress have blocked those proposals.
You might think that everything would have changed for the chemicals industry on April 16, 1947. They call it the Texas City Disaster, the worst industrial accident in U.S. history.
Night and day, for three horrible days, the inferno that almost blasted Texas City from the map rages unchecked and uncontrollable.
A ship loaded with ammonium nitrate exploded. That's the chemical that apparently caused the disaster last month in Texas. The ship triggered more explosions at chemical facilities on shore. More than 500 died. So you might think Congress would have forced industry to redesign the way they handle chemicals.
In a little more than a square mile, explosion and fire create a holocaust that baffles description.
Or you might think everything would have changed for the chemicals industry on December 3rd, 1984.
Good evening. A tragedy in central India.
That was the Bhopal disaster caused by an American corporation. Here's ABC News.
The Union Carbide pesticide plant on the edge of town suddenly began to leak. A huge cloud of suffocating poisonous gas carried on a southerly wind.
Thousands of people died. Union Carbide paid almost $500 million in damages. Or you might think the chemical industry really had to reform in 2005. Here's NBC.
Now to Texas and the huge explosion that rocked a BP refinery yesterday. Was this an incident that could have been avoided?
At least 15 people were killed and almost 200 injured. BP says they paid $1.6 billion to compensate victims and their families. Government statistics, based on press reports, show there have been hundreds of accidents at chemical facilities that have killed people in just the past dozen years. And Christine Todd Whitman says, when she heard about the West explosion last month in Texas,
it just made me so mad, and you wanted to take Congress and shake it and say, listen, what more does it take for you to understand that we need some action here?
Whitman ran EPA under President George W. Bush.
I'm a Republican. I am leery of too much regulation. Believe me, I understand it. But there are times when you need it. There's a reason for some of this stuff.
Over the past few decades, government and industry have taken steps to make chemical plants safer. For instance, Congress passed two landmark laws after the Bhopal disaster in the 1980s. They told industry, you have to tell the public which dangerous chemicals you're using. You have to tell how many people would be at risk of getting killed or injured if there's an accident at your plant. And what are you doing to prevent it? But then came 9/11, and security specialists worried that those laws on chemical plants aren't strong enough.
I mean, these things that we are talking about, chemical plants, are really pre-positioned weapons of mass destruction.
Sam Faddis knows about weapons of mass destruction. He used to work for the CIA. Faddis realized if terrorists had attacked a chemical facility instead of the World Trade Center, they could have caused a bigger disaster. The chemical industry's own reports back then showed there were hundreds of plants across the country where a single incident could potentially kill thousands of people. For instance, the Water Treatment Utility in Washington, D.C. reported that if their chlorine tanks ruptured, a deadly cloud could reach the U.S. Capitol.
And as long as you got the wind blowing in the right direction, I mean the right direction from the standpoint of a terrorist, that cloud is now going to drift into areas populated by literally millions of human beings.
So, some officials in the Bush administration decided there's a fundamental problem with the way the government regulates chemical plants. The laws basically tell industry, it's fine if you use huge amounts of deadly chemicals, even if you're right next to a city. Just be sure you protect them with measures like strong tanks and fences. Bob Bostock said, those aren't solutions. They're Band-Aids.
It was the only thing that kept me up at night.
Bostock was a top advisor to the head of EPA, Christine Todd Whitman. They decided that one of the best ways to make chemical facilities safer is to change the way they operate so they don't need so many dangerous chemicals in the first place. Engineers often call the approach inherently safer design.
For a lot of these chemicals, there are other chemicals that can be substituted that do not pose the same sort of effect if there was a breach.
And some companies did substitute other chemicals after 9/11. The wastewater treatment plant in Washington, D.C. got rid of deadly chlorine gas within 3 months, and they started treating water with safer methods. Bostock and Whitman drafted a law that would require companies across the country to see if they could use inherently safer design. They said, look, maybe every plant can't switch. It might be technically impossible or too expensive. But they said the government should require executives to at least try to do it.
If there was ever a successful attack on one of these facilities or even an accidental release, the first question you would get asked as a policymaker is, you knew this was a problem. Why haven't you done anything about it?
Meanwhile, back in 2002, a key Senate committee voted to support inherently safer technology unanimously. Then suddenly, everything screeched to a halt. President Bush's aide said, forget it. They didn't explain why publicly. And since then, public health groups and environmental groups and unions and Democrats and Republicans, they've all tried over and over again to get Congress to reconsider. They tried in 2003 and 2006 and 2009 and 2010. Whitman says, here we've just seen the devastation in Texas. You'd think Congress would finally act.
But they're very powerful influences. And in politics, you always sort of trace that back to the money.
And the money is coming from?
I guess the money's coming from the industry.
And you can see where some of that money flows if you log on to opensecrets.org. This website is run by the nonpartisan Center for Responsive Politics. They track campaign finance. And the site shows that the petrochemicals industry has funded key members of Congress who've opposed inherently safer design. And take just one of many examples. Type in the name Fred Upton from Michigan. Upton is the Republican chairman of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. No bill on inherently safer design can go far without his support. The page on Upton shows that the petrochemicals industry is one of the main industries that finance his campaign. Upton did not grant our request for an interview, but a spokesman for the chemical industry did.
You know, we stand second to none as the chemical industry in trying to implement an appropriate focus on process safety and security.
Michael Walls is vice president of the American Chemistry Council. They represent Dow, DuPont, ExxonMobil, Chevron, most of the leading petrochemical firms. The Chemistry Council has lobbied Congress for years to kill bills on inherently safer design. I asked Walls. As a layperson who got a C in chemistry, I have to say it sounds like a really attractive and totally common sense approach. You know, get chemical facilities to do everything they can to figure out, can we switch to different chemicals?
Daniel, I'd agree with you. It does sound attractive. But the basic choice comes down to, do you mandate something like a review of inherently safer technology, or do you want to require its consideration at the right time for each particular facility? One of the questions here is, who decides? Who decides what is inherently safer in any particular case?
Wall says there are already plenty of agencies that regulate the chemicals industry, although, as the West Fertilizer Investigation suggests, they're not always paying close attention. I also talked to Kathy Mathers. She's vice president of the Fertilizer Institute. Their member companies make and sell ammonium nitrate, among other chemicals. That's the product that apparently caused the explosion last month in Texas, and it's caused some of the worst industrial accidents in history. So it sounds like you're worried about federal regulators, somebody in some bureaucracy in Washington, making a decision that's well-intentioned but would affect the fertilizer industry and the food industry.
Well, agriculture knows agriculture. And certainly the regulators have their role in society. At this point, we have not seen a version of an inherently safer technology bill that we would support.
I was quite surprised that anybody will resist this concept of prevention.
Rafael More Erazo runs the Chemical Safety Board. That's the main federal agency that investigates accidents at chemical plants and then recommends how to prevent them. The board is investigating the Texas fertilizer explosion right now, and More Erazo recommends a new law. He says the federal government should require every chemical company to analyze whether they can use inherently safer design to get rid of dangerous chemicals.
You have to make a cost-benefit about what is more costly, to engage in a process to try to mitigate and avoid hazards, or deal with the families of the people that get killed, the destruction of an industry, the destruction of a community. And I claim that it's a lot more expensive to deal with these catastrophic losses than what it will take to invest to prevent this to happen in the first place.
All this raises a question. Where is President Obama on this issue?
That's our $64,000 question.
That's Rick Hind. He's legislative director of Greenpeace. Greenpeace is one of the leaders of the coalition's campaign for inherently safer technology. Obama co-sponsored a bill calling for it back when he was in the Senate. His administration backed the idea again after he became president. But
we're very concerned because we've been asking for them to look into this and to do something since 2011. And they said, well, after the election, maybe we'll do something. And now we're still waiting.
We asked the White House, where does the president stand on inherently safer design? A spokesman wouldn't say, but he sent us a statement that said, quote, chemical plant safety is a high priority, unquote.
Well, right now we're standing next to the baseball field, and if you look right behind it, you can actually just touch the refinery.
That's a mother named Erin Coles. She wishes President Obama would take action. She's taken me to Paulsboro High School. That's across the New Jersey border from Philadelphia. Her kids go here. In fact, two daughters are practicing track while the baseball team plays a game. And right beyond them, there's the PBF Energy Company refinery. It looms over the baseball diamond, metal towers, plumes of white smoke.
It almost looks like Cape Canaveral, where you see the launch pads and things like that.
Coles has helped organize a community group to educate people about the potential dangers. The refinery's own reports show that it uses tons of hydrofluoric acid. They show that an accident could send a toxic cloud across an area with 3 million people.
I'm concerned that so many people live in a radius around the plant that depending on the wind direction and which way the plume goes from the refinery, it could be fatal to them.
A recent study by the United Steelworkers concludes that the company could use inherently safer design and switch to safer chemicals. In fact, other refineries have already done that. I called PBF to find out why they don't switch, but they referred me to their industry trade group. A spokeswoman wrote that there are a wide variety of safety measures to prevent an accident at refineries like this one. Of course, that's what some executives said about other plants before they exploded. Daniel Zwerdling, NPR News.
You can read more about the debate over chemical plant safety at our website, npr.org.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.